Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds on the show today. Rich Guthrie is here in the studio. There was some question about whether he'd make it into the studio, but by golly, here he is. He's a veteran birder, former NCON specialist, and compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident avian expert. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can check in on Facebook. It's facebook.com/wamcradio. You can tweet us at @wamcvoxpop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But the number to call, again, 800-348-2551. Rich, nice to have you here.
Hey, nice to be here. Fun ride in, let me tell you.
Fun ride in. And Dina, our office manager, handed me this note from a listener. It says, tell the blanks that are driving to turn their lights on so the other blanks can see them.
Oh, good idea.
And really, there's no reason to for personal invective here. I mean, but it's a good bit of advice.
Is blank a bad word?
Well, if you had heard the actual word,
oh,
you might
well,
have been
then
offended.
That's different.
Yes.
Yes. Well, up until now, there'll be blanks, and the blanks should turn on their lights.
That's a great idea. And if you are driving, take it easy. Keep both hands on the wheel. You know, if you're going to call this program, hopefully it's with Bluetooth.
Cheery notes.
That's very nice. So the bird count, the backyard bird count is Saturday.
Yeah? No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Starts tomorrow, first thing in the morning. As soon as you wake up and look out the window, start counting.
You'll just see snow.
And snowbirds.
And what are some snowbirds we may see?
Well, you know, the typical backyard feeder birds, the cardinal, let's hope, nice bright color red. The blue jay, let's hope, nice bright blue, red, white, and blue. And then the rest of them, the sparrows, the juncos, the mourning doves, the goldfinches, the nuthatches, the woodpeckers, oh, they're all waiting to line up and be counted.
So the feeding, it's a good time to do that.
Well, yes. Yes, it's a good time for the birds and for the people.
Okay. All right. Well, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Let's go right to the phones. Dave in Stratford, you're on first. Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have the pleasure to report seeing a snowy owl.
Ooh.
Several times.
Yeah, and over in Stratford area?
In the town of Fairfield.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Just across the county line.
Well,
I live in the western part of Fulton County.
Okay. Okay.
It appears to be a female.
There has been a major influx of snowy owls this winter, all over the place.
Do we know why?
No.
Okay.
There are several theories out there. It has to do with food, available food and population and competition. But this year is unprecedented in the numbers and the distribution of snowy owls that have come down out of the Arctic for the winter. And here they are. They're all around us. And there's one out there in Fulton County right at the county airport that has been hanging around. You know, almost any airport will have a snowy owl or two. Albany County Airport has up to five of them at the moment.
So I gather from Dave's excitement and from what you say that at one time these were rarities?
Oh, they're rare any time.
Yeah.
Except this year, because of this influx, they're not. They still draw the attention they deserve.
Well, Dave, good luck, and thanks a lot. Take some pictures.
Hey, I have taken some pictures. I got another comment, too.
Okay.
I live out in the woods, so I have a mouse problem in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And when I catch them in a trap, I just throw them outside. I discovered that the blue jays find them delicious.
Oh, really?
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Blue jays,
go ahead,
Dave.
I kept throwing them outside, figuring that at night a fox might get them or something.
Uh-huh.
And then one morning I watched a blue jay come down, take a couple of pecks at it to make sure it was dead, and then took it away.
Yeah.
That was pretty flabbergasted.
It is a pretty big meal for a blue jay, but I'm not surprised. They are opportunists and related to the crows, and crows are notorious for that sort of diet.
And, terrific.
And, good idea, Dave.
Well, that's great. And isn't nature wonderful? Hey, Dave, have a great one. How much snow you have out there?
Well, we're kind of lucky. It's gotten very little snow, maybe an inch or two.
Well, we'll send some more out your way. How's that?
We're on the western fringe.
Yeah. Well, lucky you. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Lou in Altamont. Lou, you're on.
Yes, I have two questions, gentlemen.
Okay.
The first one, my feeders are associated with the windows for the most part, except for one that is a platform feeder, and that's maybe 50 feet away from the house.
All right.
What I have noticed is that I can walk up to the windows at the side of the house where the feeders are as close as a foot and a half, and blue jays and so forth will just continue to feed without any concern. The feeder that's 50 feet back, when I walk by that window and stand there, the ravens that are regular visitors will take off. What makes them so sensitive to human visibility inside a window, whereas smaller birds don't seem to care?
Well, first of all, it's a lot of it is individual. One bird of the same type, but one blue jay or one cardinal may be more tolerant than another of the same species. And then there are the more wary species. And you say raven. Are you certain they're ravens?
I'm going by size alone.
Okay.
I assume that the bigger bird is the raven and the smaller bird would be a crow.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the main ways to tell them apart, because otherwise they look alike. The raven is very wary. It's their nature. As some birds are more tolerant than others, ravens and, a few other ones are very suspicious and will react to the slightest they perceive to be a threat. Chickadees and blue jays and nuthatches and titmice are typically more tolerant of people's attention.
They don't seem to react to, no other bird seems to react to somebody inside of a window, though.
Huh. Yeah, well, they may have become accustomed to you. Perhaps they're not even seeing you inside the window.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, they might have come to realize a while ago that you're inside, they're outside, and as long as it stays that way, everything's okay.
The second question, and this is my wife's issue.
Yes, sir.
Since we have a number of platform feeders, she's concerned that when we have weather such as this, that she has to get them cleared off immediately and restore food or ground feeders. What do they eat when their snow is on the ground?
That's a good question, and it's a tough go for them. Many birds will have to sit out the storm waiting for the all clear before they can go on to their feeding routine. They'll have to find food that's available to them. That might be seeds on a plant that's above the snow level, or berries on a tree, or sumac.
But they won't go to a feeder?
Oh, they love to go to a feeder. That's the benefit of having a feeder. But if the feeder is covered with snow, if it's a platform feeder and you got 6 inches of snow on there, the seed is 3 inches down, they're not going to find it.
But what about the hanging feeders?
Oh,
I've never noticed the ground feeders, such as doves. I've never noticed a single dove sitting on a normal ring feeder.
No, and they won't. They're too big for that. Their feet are too small. And I think, we like they look graceful, but they're not. So they'll have to resort. They'll have to pick from the gleanings from the spill that the birds that are coming to the hanging feeders will knock to the ground, and they better be in front of the line.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Let's go to Mark in Washington County. Mark, you're on.
Thank you. Generally, I don't encourage the birds because I have cats. And cats are, I have one in particular, a female cat who just passed away. That's all she cared about was birds, and the males don't bother them. I have about 8 acres on one side of the road and 9 acres on the other side of the road that has been more or less pasture land and open land for the last 25 or 30 years. And last spring, I found, after going through the bird books and things, I found a woodcock.
Mm-hmm.
I identified it by its beak. It's long, almost not tapered at all.
Oh, yeah.
It has a rounded end on it and about 4.5-5 inches long. And the next day I saw its mate hanging around, and eventually, of course, it took off. I was not aware that the woodcock was a bird that was that common in this part of, we're on the, almost on the Vermont border in Washington County, about halfway up the, well, we're above Greenwich. And I was just wondering if you could speak to the, you know, the population of, the, of woodcock and where their territory is. And I know they like to be on grassy or fields that are.
Okay, like, yeah, I'll be glad to. The woodcock is a type of sandpiper, believe it or not. They have the sandpipers that have turned to the woods and feed on the ground with that long bill that they use to probe into the soft earth.
It looks like a perfect tool.
It is, and they reach down there, and the tip is very flexible, very sensitive, and they reach around with that tip of their bill way down below the mud in search of grubs and earthworms and other critters that might be trying to hide beneath the mud. They're not uncommon. They're just hard to see because they're mostly nocturnal. And I'm glad you brought it up because being as this is Valentine's Day coming up tomorrow,
yeah.
The woodcock should be coming back in about a month or so.
Oh, okay.
And I invite you to go out there in the evening and watch them, listen for their courtship song.
What is that?
Oh, it's a marvelous show to watch. They fly up into the air to the height of visibility,
mm-hmm.
and then they start plummeting in a parachuting loop-de-loop, spiraling
oh, really?
Downward crash with their wings out fluttering. And the feathers of the wings are structured so that the air passing through the wingtips forms a bit of a whistle. And so they're whistling on the way down in this parachute-like flight,
wow.
this acrobatic flight. It's really a marvel. And then when they get to the ground, they go through this turkey strut type of dance on the ground in front of the female. You know,
huh.
they have several males trying to vie for the attention.
Sure.
Well,
we've all done that.
Yeah, and their show is just about to begin. They start early in late March, early April,
yeah.
and it continues. So I invite you to go out there as soon as the ground thaws and they start returning.
They're a fairly good sized bird. I mean, yeah. they're not small.
No, they're not. They're about this a little bigger than a pigeon or thereabouts
yeah,
in size.
About that size. And I've only seen these two. I've lived here 30 years, and I've never seen any others, and that's what surprised me. It took me a while to identify it using the bird book because I had never seen it. I had no idea what it was.
Well, they're out there, and come April.
I'll look for that.
That's great.
You're in for a show.
All right, now we'll have to take a break here. I hate to break this up. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is here. Oh, we have calls to take, and we'll do it coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities, open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. The Blue Rock Restaurant, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, Chef Chris Ramirez, creating new American cuisine and handcrafted desserts, wine and beer from local to worldwide, live jazz Fridays, theBlueRockRestaurant.com. And the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, serving the public for over 30 years, 800-342-3661.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC on a snowy Thursday, 1-800-348-2551. Do take care if you are out on the roads today. It is sloppy out there for a good portion of the region. A good portion of the Northeast, good portion of the East Coast, as a matter of fact. So stay inside.
Enjoy.
Let Rich Guthrie entertain you. Let's go to Bill in East Nassau. Bill.
Hi.
Hi.
Rich.
Yes, sir.
Ray, how are you?
Hi.
I have a question for you. Several weeks ago, my wife and I were in a parking lot on Delaware Avenue in Albany, and it was just after dusk, and it was snowing. But we observed what appeared to be hundreds of birds in the trees surrounding the parking lot, and they were extremely noisy. They sounded a little bit like crows, but I don't think they were. And they would fly from tree to tree. And it wouldn't be hyperbole if I said there were hundreds. And I just want to know if you have any idea what this behavior is about and what type of birds these might have been?
Well, I can suppose, I will suggest that they were crows.
Okay.
What happens in the wintertime is crows gather in these large flocks to spend the night in a roost. They'll find a place where they all gather up and return there each evening, and they're very sociable. They have a lot to say to each other work their way to wherever it is they're going to spend the night. So I suspect that's what it is. Another possibility is the starlings, the European starling, which is a bird that's not native to the area, but has increased in numbers to where there you can actually see hundreds of thousands of them at a time, will gather also in an evening roost, come in from the countryside from all directions, gather up and spend the night. They like to spend their night under, let's say, the bridge over the Hudson River or a similar type of man-made structure. Mm. Whereas the crows like to find treetops someplace. I've noticed them in the south of Albany and over in Troy and over in Schenectady. There's another crow roost over there. So they seem to have taken a liking to the urban setting.
Well, they definitely sounded like crows, and it may have just been hard for me to observe their size because of the snow. So, but they were literally hundreds of them. I've never seen that many birds, and they're very, very noisy.
Well, it happens almost every night, every year.
Interesting.
And while you're listening to them, and you might want to just check out your references to watch or listen for, because they all look alike, for the occasional fish crow. And I'll tell you what to listen for.
Okay.
That. It sounds like our American crow with a Bostonian accent. here's a simulated difference.
Okay.
The American crow, ah, ah, ah. And the fish crow, ah, ah.
Okay.
Ah, ah.
Ah.
Ah. And they usually go in couplets, ah, ah. And they mix and mingle. They get in there, and although they speak a different language, they seem to understand one another and say, okay, have a good night.
Well, there you go.
Who knew?
Who knew? There you go, Bill. Keep an ear out for them then.
Okay. Thank you very much for the explanation. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill. Okay, Bill. Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Ah, ah. I got it. Ah, ah.
Ah, fishy.
Is that right?
Yes.
Jim and Adams. Jim, you're up.
Hey, yay, Ray.
How are you?
Good going. Yes, I was wondering if Rich could update us a little bit on any new sightings, if there have been any confirmed sightings or whatever, on the ivory-billed woodpecker down south.
I wish I could, Jim.
No, nothing?
And I can't.
Nothing.
And just to bring when I was down there in Arkansas, by Brinkley, Arkansas, I did have the good fortune to actually see an ivory-billed woodpecker in the wild.
You did?
I did. And no pictures.
No.
If I had pictures, there was a APB out for ivory-billed woodpecker pictures, and I had the camera. But here's the story: the thing was flying, and I figured, well, if I move, he's going to keep on going. If I don't move, he might light in a tree, and then I could reach for the camera and take a picture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he did not stop. He kept on going.
He was on a beeline for somewhere.
Away from me, I'm pretty sure. But in any event. It was in an area down there that I think it might well have been the last one. I can't say for sure, but I will say this, and I know there are doubters out there, and I would be one myself, but I am I am very confident that that's what I saw, not a pileated woodpecker, an anhinger, or a stork.
I was going to ask you, what is the actually differentiation between a pileated or pileated and the ivory bill?
Well, the amount of white on the back of the wing, on the top of the wing, is the main difference. The ivory bill has a broad patch of white on the, looks like almost like a whitewash fence.
Mm-hmm. Top of the wing.
Half of the top of the wing. The pileated has white that shows on the bottom of the wing. And
not on the top.
Not on the top. And also, the difference in shape, there actually is. The ivory bill has a different wing shape than the pileated, and there are plenty of pileateds down there.
Are they similar in size?
Somewhat.
The ivory bill is much larger.
It is larger, but when you're seeing a single individual and you don't have a direct size comparison. That's not a useful tool.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Excellent.
Well, I'm sorry to say.
We have plenty of ravens over here in western Massachusetts.
Well.
Three nesting sites over here, and I've noticed over the years that, like as you said, they're very wary, and I very seldom ever see a raven in broad daylight will fly out over an open area, over a valley, like, say. They'll try to skirt the edges, especially where anyone is likely to be around in the open areas, people on the ground or anything, roads, houses, whatever. They'll skirt the edges, even flying in the air when they're making their transits, their feeding grounds, and back to their nesting area.
So it's not the most direct way as the crow flies.
No.
Ha-ha.
No.
Jim,
and
thank
very,
you.
Very guttural and very coarse-sounding cry from the raven.
They are.
Hey, what's the difference again?
The difference is in sound.
Okay.
With the three crows we have, the American crow, ah, ah, the fish crow, uh-uh, uh-uh, and the raven has this big,
very guttural, very harsh.
And they're also quite musical when they want to be.
Yes.
Believe it or not, they're hard to imagine.
All right. Thanks
all right. Yeah, I like it when the show starts degenerating into sound effects. It's just it's fun.
Music.
Marianne in Albany. Marianne, you're on.
Hi. Glad to hear all this entertainment.
Well, thank you.
I'm concerned because I have no birds in my yard for the past 3 or 4 weeks. I had cardinals. I had juncos. Even the sparrows have gone. And I'm just wondering. Is it because the crows have come back in the neighborhood, or the squirrels are too competitive, or?
No, that shouldn't be it. Are you putting other? Is there food out there for them?
I
mean, that's always
a
big draw.
Yeah, I had been spreading sunflower seed.
Wow!
I had to take the feeders down because the sparrows were into them so much.
Wait! Sparrows are birds.
That's
I
true.
I know. My preferred birds.
Oh! Well then.
No, but they've all gone away.
Well, usually there's some reason for that. Maybe your neighbor is not, you know, saying sparrows welcome here. Everybody else come along. Just kidding, though. It could be that there's there must have been some change. That's all I can say. It's maybe a cat moved in, or a hawk has taken up residence nearby. And
well, a hawk does come through periodically, but they usually don't disappear because of that.
Right. They usually don't. They
usually are here.
They mind the presence of a hawk, but they get over it. So
So it could be a temporary thing.
Well, I would think so. Try changing where the bird feeder is located if you can.
Okay.
And also offer maybe a different variety. One thing I've come to like is putting peanut butter. And I found out I seem to hoard peanut butter, and I shouldn't, but I do. And I found a good way to share it is to put it on the trunk of a tree, to slather it on the trunk of a tree.
And okay, I have done that, but the squirrels have gotten
They love that, too, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well I
Marianne,
thought that was a mystery.
Well, thanks, Marianne.
Well, keep trying.
Thank you.
Put some suet out there and keep trying. And report your sightings on the great backyard bird count.
Oh, I will. I do. That's why I'm worried. I don't think I'm going to have anything to report.
Oh, you will. Watch and see. Okay.
All right, thanks, Marianne.
Thanks a lot.
All right, so how does one get involved with the backyard bird count?
Oh, easy pickings. Go to audubon.org.
Okay.
And there will be a pathway through that website to get you on to great backyard bird count. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's all compiled and gathered up by Cornell University and shared with the world.
All right.
And you can have different levels of participation. All they ask is you watch periodically beginning tomorrow morning and right on through Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And this nice long weekend will be a good start to creating a bird list.
All right, so that's audubon.org.
That is correct.
All right, here's a question from Christine on Facebook. Are the blue herons in the Mid-Hudson Valley Catskill region year-round or migratory? And if so, where do they go, and when do they generally come back, and when do they leave? Also, what is their population in this area? Thank you, Christine, in West Saugerties.
Okay, the great blue heron... Magnificent large birds.
Oh, indeed.
And that look like flying pterodactyls when they're overhead. They're out of here now.
Okay.
They eat mainly fish and other aquatic frogs and crayfish and salamanders and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, there's not that much variety around this time of year. So they head south. They usually go to the coastal waters, the saltwater coastal marshes, and further on. Then they'll be back as soon as mid-April, let's say, and they'll start nesting right away. They show up and they go to their nest heronry, where they'll build these magnificent stick nests on the top of the tallest spindly trees in the middle of a wooded swamp. And a dozen or so may gather and nest in the same colony. It's an amazing thing to watch. A few of them may stick around and find if they find an open patch of water. But I think this year that probably not much of that around.
Because of the cold temperatures.
The cold. It froze up everything, and they have to get out of town. I've seen them in open fields where they may be finding a field mouse out there, but those guys are hard-pressed. They should really be south.
Okay. All right. Very good. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Daria and Beacon, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, so I live on the Fishkill Creek, and I put out bird feeders, especially when a snowstorm's coming. And yesterday and a couple times last week, I noticed a whole bunch of robins just hanging around the feeders. And I assume they're non-migrating robins, and I'm just wondering, what is the deal with them? What do they do?
Well, you're not alone. Robins have, for some reason, this year, just as the snowy owls have come up with this incursion from the north, the robins, many of them have stayed put through the winter. And in some areas, we're seeing hundreds, if not thousands, of robins this year. It's not unusual. In other years, we've seen flocks of robins. But
this
year,
it's very cold winter, though.
Yeah, it is. And the food is scarce. They're finding they're having a hard time getting a meal. Of course, there's no worms to be had, so they can't resort to that. They have to go to berries, whatever berries they can find. So they right now, they're eating whatever leftover grapes are on the vines. They go to the cedar trees. They love cedar berries, but those are tiny little things, and I can't imagine they're very nutritious, but enough of them and will sustain you. And they're also eating sumac berries, which I don't know if you've ever looked at a sumac berry. It's not very appetizing. It's not like a nice, juicy, wild grape.
Yeah.
They also like crab apples and apples.
So, I have that in my yard. I have a crab apple tree or two in my yard.
They love you.
That might be why they're coming around my yard.
They love you for that. And so, yes, you're right. There are robins out there this winter, more so than I can say is normal. Not extraordinary. I've seen one winter I remember counting, and this wasn't easy, 100,000 robins in one particular roost.
And, holy cow.
Yes. But and that's just like the crows and that we were talking about earlier. They gather up nightly at a communal roost, and then in the day they'll spread out over the countryside. So... Mm-hmm. Anyway, you're right about that, Dorian.
Well, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Joan in Worthington. Hi, Joan. You're on.
Hi. You had a caller a few callers back that reminded me of a springtime tradition I have.
All right.
Uh-huh.
And that's chasing woodcock. And the way you do it is... when they're on the ground, they make
sound. Oh, yes, right, yes.
And you have to stay perfectly still.
Mm-hmm.
When they go up into the air, you run as fast as you can to the spot where they were because they tend to come down in the same general area.
They do.
And you listen for the sound because they make a different sound when they're circling up above.
Yes.
And then when they start to come down, it's a different sound. As soon as you hear that sound, you stop dead in your tracks and you stay perfectly still. And I've been able to get, like, within 10 feet of them.
Well, good for you, and you're right about that. They're dancing. They're doing this aerial dance for the female that's sitting there on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and that's where they're going to come back to, so they could do their little strut down on the ground. And you really do want to be able to see that, but you got to be careful because if you come too close while the male is circling through the air, and the female moves away because you're approaching too soon or too close, he's not going to come back there. He's going to go to where the female went.
Mm-hmm.
And but you're right about that. And when they're on the ground, they have another very interesting sound that they make. It goes something like meep.
Yes.
Meep. And you listen for that, and you could be driving down a country road in at twilight in the spring, and you'll hear the woodcock out there in the fields on either side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Meep. Meep. And then you'll know that they're out there. Then if you're fortunate enough to be able to pull over or go down, walk down to that meadow, you may be able to watch their flight in the air. And then, as you say, you can approach them with a flashlight and see them on the ground. Woodcock don't mind close approach. However, they don't like too close approach.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They rely on their cryptic coloring and the darkness to remain hidden.
Well, I usually do it just as it's getting dark. I don't use a flashlight.
Right.
So
well,
I'm able to get a little closer.
And then as it gets dark, it becomes harder and harder to see them. And then
and
the show.
And that's when I quit.
Yeah, right. But they keep it. They keep going.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they do. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I can hear them.
Well, Joan, thanks a lot. Very interesting call. We appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551 is the number. Lynn in Shelburne, Mass. You're on.
Hello, Rich. I've been on here before. I've got a question about, and I thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The bird book that I should get.
Yes.
One thing.
Okay.
For Western Mass or Northern Northeast.
Well, there are several out there that I recommend for both the beginner and the advanced birder. The best ones, the best thing to do is to go to your local bookshop and thumb mm-hmm. through the ones that are on the shelf. And I would suggest looking for Sibley, Dave Sibley. There's several field guides that he puts out, or Don and Lillian Stokes. The Stokes Field Guide.
Right.
And the one that I like best, unfortunately, I don't think it's in print right now, but if you can find it in a used bookstore or perhaps one on the shelf still, is Jim Coe, C-O-E, Field Guide to the Birds of Eastern North America.
Okay.
All right.
Does he have other ones? Jim Coe, Eastern?
North America.
Yeah, North America. Okay.
And then going back to, now this one you'll have to find in a used bookstore if you can, or borrow it from the library, is Roger Torrey Peterson's How to Know the Birds. Long out of print, excellent guide for beginners.
Wow. Well, okay, that's good. Okay, so next question I have so many questions
for
you.
All right, can we put you on hold for just a sec, Lynn? We've got to take a fast break, and then we'll get to your second question.
Yes, yes.
Splendid. All right, let's do that. Zach, the engineer, take it away, my friend.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, presenting Maple Fest, tree tapping, syrup making, pancakes, music, and maple gras, a seasonal Cajun dinner and dance, Saturday, March 1st, ashokancenter.org. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, Massachusetts, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. And Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, featuring Miele, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapori Vapor Cleaning, Sales, Service, Repairs, LEXIVAC.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC on a Thursday afternoon. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We talk birds today. We'll go back to Lynn. You're in Shelburne Falls?
Yes.
Hi, back on.
You're a genius, Rich. And also, wow. You've got really good bird calls.
Oh, thank
you. Love it. Absolutely love it.
That was an imitation.
All right.
And what was it?
Ray?
I have no idea.
Okay.
A blue-footed booby.
Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
That was Ray's imitation of the crow, and he did a good job at that.
Not bad, but kind of low.
All right. Second question.
Anyway, I've tried to enter the bird count. I've had a really tough time. I don't like the computer at all.
Oh, okay.
And I had a very tough time on Audubon getting to, you know, even anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to know, I'm thinking that what you have to count is any particular bird you see at one time should be counted.
That's correct.
Okay. I assume that. That's
okay.
All. Okay, I got so many goldfinches here, I'm out of my mind.
Well, the trick about that is to take the maximum number at any one moment.
Yeah.
And then use that. So
yep.
if you see seven, and then another one shows up later
50.
On, you still have seven.
Okay.
We're talking about 50.
Oh, well, Lynn, we got to move it along, but thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Yakko in Newburgh. You're on.
Hi. Thank you, Al. I live in the city of Newburgh, and this is commenting a similar comment to a caller that you had, I think, in in the Massachusetts area about the huge clouds of crows.
That's correct, yes.
Well, I used to commute to the city and would take the ferry from Newburgh over to Beacon.
Mm-hmm.
And around Washington's headquarters here in the city of Newburgh, where they have all of these beautiful trees, early in the morning, around 6 a.m. in the winter, there would be hundreds, if not thousands, of these crows in all of these trees, and they would all move in one wave, hundreds of them in this undulating pattern from one tree to another, or they would go from the Washington's headquarters up to Mount St. Mary's College, just flocks and flocks of them. So I've witnessed that too, and I've often wondered whether they're crows or ravens, if crows and ravens roost in this, if they have the same roosting places or different. And the other question I had was, do certain birds only go to certain trees?
Generally, no. The second question, no. And the first question, no, too. So,
what was the first question again?
About the ravens.
Do they
gather up like the crows do? And the answer is no. They have their social groups consisting of extended family, but that's as far as that goes. They're not communal, at least not in our area.
So you won't find thousands of them?
No, you won't. If you find six of them, that's a lot.
Okay, let's go over to Robert in Petersburg. Robert, you're on.
Yes, thank you. There's two birds I'm interested in right now. That were made extinct by the United States Bird Hunting Association back in the turn of the previous century. The two birds are passenger pigeons and the beautiful Carolina parrot.
Okay.
And what I want to know is there any effort made to restore these birds out from extinction?
Well,
by cloning.
Once they're by cloning.
Funny you should mention that. There is an effort out there. Somebody is doing some DNA work, and they hope to put genes from passenger pigeons into match them up with band-tailed pigeons, a wild pigeon from the West, and then eventually have mourning doves incubate them. I can't defend the project, but it is something that somebody is, since Robert brought it up,
a project that somebody has conceived
and is trying it out. I don't know where they are along with that. They may be just talking about it, or they may have made some first steps.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, good.
And as far as the Carolina parakeet, no effort so far as I know with regard to that.
Yeah. Okay. This is really strange how Audubon and one of his compatriots, Lewis, reported seeing billions of these passenger pigeons in one flock, flying overhead.
They were absolutely extremely numerous, and they form clouds in the sky.
Yeah.
So it's a shame, you know. That was a very dark era in our history.
Why did they call them passenger pigeons?
Good question. I don't know.
All right.
They passaged through. They were migratory, highly migratory, and I think it's just taking the word passage and applying it in a different fashion.
Let's go to Doe and Wendell. Doe, you're on.
Hi. I just put my first bird feeder out. It's a block of suet, and 2 weeks ago, and I haven't had a bird come around yet.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, I was told if I put a colored ribbon hanging on it, the breeze would attract a bird?
Not necessarily. They should be able to find the suet themselves. Location is everything. It may be in a precarious place where...
In the middle of the woods.
Yeah, well, they should be able to find it. Once they do, they will come back to it. Or if they see somebody else find it, they will investigate it. Birds learn by observing.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering where you got the suet. I like to use the pure suet that I buy from the butcher section in the supermarket. And not, by the way, I went to a butcher figuring, well, I'm going to do better. I'm going to go to a real butcher who cuts the meat in the back there, and you can watch him carve it up and all that. And I got trimmings, which is just pure fat.
Yeah,
and for some reason the birds aren't fond of that. It sits there while they go after the real beef suet, the kidney suet that you get from The other section of the butcher shop.
Oh,
so
fascinating.
Anyway, the some of those suet blocks that you find in the supermarket, I'm not quite sure of the ingredients in those things. That may be part of the problem there.
All right.
But keep trying. Try another method and see what happens.
All right.
Well,
thank you very much.
Okay,
Dee. Thanks a lot. Now, there's a kind of a newbie to this, and you have a blog post on sort of how to get into bird watching.
If you want to be a bird watcher and you want to know what to do, how to go about getting there, sure. Check out the blog in the Times Union, timesunion.com or blog.timesunion.com,
right? Well, if you go to the Times Union site, click on the blog, do the birding, and that's Rich's blog, and you'll find out a lot of cool stuff.
How to become a bird watcher and get your wings.
Oh, well, very nice. Vince in Delanson. Vince, you're on.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to say that I run on a rural road near a hay farm in Delanson, and I've seen a flock of about a dozen snow buntings. And I saw them last year also, and they're back again this year. I'm wondering how common that is to see something like that.
Well, up in the Arctic, the snow bunting, which is a black and white, beautiful black and white bird, is abundant. They're almost everywhere. Down here, they come down here during the winter, and they typically like open fields.
Yeah, that's where I saw.
And the seashore. Then they like the shoulder of the road when the road is plowed and they can get at the seeds that are exposed along the grassy edge of a road or the grit that's on the road. So they'll fly out from the field down onto the road shoulder and feed there for a while, then fly back out into the field, where, by the way, they have to spend a night, such as what's coming up tonight, sitting in a snowbank. Which could be a major problem, especially, you know, I hate to say it, if people are out there on a snowmobile. These things are burrowed into the snow for like a little igloo.
Right.
They can end up being crushed or entrapped under the snow if it gets compacted overhead.
Well, this is on a farm, and I haven't seen any snowmobiles, so hopefully they'll be okay.
Right, that bunch should be all right. And as you drive the roads, especially with the snow covering the fields during the daytime today, the back roads should have the occasional flock of maybe a dozen to 20 to maybe 200 snow buntings that will flee in front of the car. What to watch for when you see the snow buntings are the occasional longspur, which is the Lapland longspur, which comes down and will mingle in with the snow buntings. They're all dark bird, or the horned larks. The larks are beautiful songbirds that nest. Some do nest in our area, but they do like to associate with the snow buntings and the longspurs in open fields.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is here on a snowy Thursday. Lissa in Kingston is up. Hi, Lissa.
Hi, Rich and Ray. Thanks for taking my call. I was sitting and looking out the window today and during this heavy snowstorm, and I saw what looked like about 100 birds flying between the big oak next door and my 7 or 8 foot tall, I don't know if it's a spruce, but it's a type of fir tree, and they kept flying between the two. And I was curious, were those crows?
Well,
are they looking for the berries?
Well, probably not crows. Crows during the daytime will tend to spread out over the countryside and become more individual. They'll gather in the evening, spend the night, and then disperse in the morning. Well, what you may have there are probably starlings, which are blackbirds that will be drawn to a cedar or a sumac tree, and they travel in large flocks. Or, being as you're down in Kingston, which has been in the southern fringe of our range, might even be blackbirds, red-winged blackbirds or grackles, a few of which might have spent the winter. And they, too, will gather in flocks and move around during the daytime in flocks. But I suspect what you may be seeing are starlings. You might want to check that out.
Okay, thank you, because they were quite dark, and they seem to be having a heck of a time flying around and from tree to tree, but always going back to that filling up this one fir tree.
Well, I have a suspicion that they're not crows.
Okay, super. Thank you so much. Love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to Mary in Westford. Mary, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Rich and Ray.
when Rich was recommending some books, our emergency scanner went off.
Oh, boy.
So I was wondering, can the books that he recommended like 15, 20 minutes ago be posted on the WAMC site?
It's a good idea, and you can mention them again, Rich, by all means.
I can, and I was going by author, so because each of the authors have several different books that you might investigate. And since books are a personal preference, I would say go to a bookstore or a backyard bird feeder store and check out what books they have on their shelves and see which one you like.
Stokes is one, right?
Stokes is one. Don and Lillian Stokes, as
okay.
well as Sibley, David Sibley.
Okay.
And Jim Coe, James Coe, C-O-E.
Okay.
And Roger Torrey Peterson.
Okay, I have that, yeah.
Okay, and then the other one is Crosley.
Crosley, okay,
Crosley. ID Guide.
You bring that often.
I do.
Yeah.
I use that.
Okay, but will you post it on the website?
Wondering. I'll have to talk to our producer about that. We would need to get a list from Rich and then post it up there, but we'll give it our best, okay?
That would be great. And one last question.
Sure.
I saw a flicker this week. I live up on a mountain outside of Cooperstown, farm fields all over, mountain all over, and I saw my first flicker that I haven't seen in a number of years, and I was wondering how can I attract them a little bit more because I haven't seen them in so long, and I was thrilled to see the
Well, as you know, the flicker is a type of woodpecker.
Right.
They usually migrate out of the area. However,
okay.
A few of them do stick around for some reason. I guess the bugs are frozen, but they'll take them. But in any event, the flicker will stick around and maybe become a little more conspicuous in the wintertime when there are fewer leaves on the tree.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. The only other time I've seen them is in the beginning of spring when the little frogs are doing their thing.
And they come back and they want to find a mate, so they're busy being conspicuous. Then they quiet down. But the flicker is one of those half-hardy type bird species, most of which migrate away. A few stick around. Fewer, of course, than the number of robins and bluebirds that stick around,
right.
but a few might stick around through the winter.
And there's nothing that I can do to attract a little bit more of them or not really?
No, the occasional flicker will come to a suet feeder.
Right, that's what they came to, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, well, there you go. And
put out more suet, huh?
Well, then the downy and hairy woodpeckers will love you for that.
Right, they do. We have a lot of birds. I'm looking forward to the spring and seeing the spring birds, but I love my winter birds. So.
Mm. Well, Michelle,
thank you for the
so
information.
Much.
Quite welcome.
Appreciate the call. Let's go over to Joan in Columbia County. Joan, how are you?
Hi. I'm wondering why we're seeing red-winged blackbirds at the feeder all during February, because I thought that they left and that they come back in the early spring.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. However, just like we were talking about with the flicker, and the robins, there are some that will stick around, and and especially if they find a friendly bird feeder that they'll keep coming back to. I know, for the most part, red-winged blackbirds and grackles and rusty blackbirds are gone. They're way south of us. But on occasion, a few might stick around. They are gregarious, so where there's one, there's probably more than one, up to a dozen or 20. And they'll keep coming back now that they found a friendly place.
Okay. Thanks.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Now we go to Michelle in Mount Tremper. Michelle, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, we only have about a minute.
Hey, Rich, I had a great experience the other morning and kind of an odd one I had to share with you. I have a very active bird feeder, and I'm careful when I go out in the morning because I let my little dogs out, and I don't want them to go after a squirrel or a bird. And I look outside before I'm letting them out, and I see this beautiful, it looked like a fur pillow, perfectly symmetrical, and I thought, gee, did somebody leave a pillow on my doorstep? And just as I opened the door, it was a bunch of mourning doves.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Is that normal? And they were perfectly symmetrical.
Oh, no. Usually, you know, mourning doves are graceful looking. They look very charming and elegant, but they're not that friendly to one another. So
no.
To have them all cuddle up and snuggle up like that.
Sounds like a hallucinatory experience.
Well, it sounded like it. And then I wondered if I wasn't just calling the mourning doves and they were really something else. But they sure looked like pretty pigeons.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Well, that's a possibility. But I'd like to think that they were morning doves and you were having a happy moment with them.
Well, Michelle, thanks for the most surrealistic moment of the show, and that's it for today. So we're done. And Rich Guthrie, thank you for coming in the terrible weather.
The blizzard, yes.
You did very well, and we appreciate it. I hope you make it home safely, and then you can do another show with us.
Okay, yeah, I'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenAndPerrin.com. Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers, May 3rd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive, RockTheRidge50.org for registration. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org. Thanks again for being with us today on Vox Pop. I apologize if you didn't make it through. There's only so much time. We only have so much time, and we do our best, but thanks for calling, everybody. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who handled the controls. Anthony Nelson answered the phones. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh boy, it's a very special Valentine's Day-themed Food Friday. Right now, stay tuned for a news update.